In this episode, I am joined by Dan True as he shares with us how to create adventures that focus on murders and mysteries. Welcome to the Mithras Matters podcast, season 1, episode 54, Murder and Mystery in Easy Steps. And welcome to Mithras Matters, a podcast dedicated to the Mithras rule set and all its supplements. As always, I'm your host, Inwills, and welcome to February. Yes, it's February, the month that I can't say correctly. How I love making the episode for this month. In the UK, we have the following holidays during February. We have Shrove Tuesday, commonly known as Pancake Day, and of course, Valentine's Day, the latter being the day that I pretend every year that the post office has lost all my Valentine cards again. One of the great things about the Mithras community, and there are many, is the wealth of expertise that exists. You only need to post a question on either the Discord or on the forums, and you will receive a range of opinions and answers. I recognise that many of you have been playing this game a lot longer than I have, and have loads more knowledge and understanding of the system. And because of this, I'm always reaching out to the community when I have a question that I can't answer or I need support creating an adventure. Well, I've decided to add yet another game to our rotation. We all enjoy Call of Cthulhu in the past, and I wanted to capture the essence of a Call of Cthulhu adventure in a new campaign. I've decided to use the After the Vampire Wars rule set and set the campaign in modern times. But I quickly realised that I had no idea how to even start creating a murder mystery campaign. However, I knew a man who did. Dan True GM'd the introductory adventure from his soon-to-be-published Book of Schemes for us, so I knew he would be an expert on creating a murder mystery adventure. So I arranged a call and got him to teach me everything he knew. Apologies for any strange background noises throughout the interview. I had the plasterers in fixing a ceiling. And sorry for being so fixated on NPCs. Listen to the interview and you'll see why. Anyway, without further ado, I'll let Dan introduce himself.
So yeah, I'm Dan True, and people may know me from the Mithras Discord. I'm also the author of the Mithras Combat Modules, and I have a book on the way, which should be hitting shelves within a month or so, hopefully. I've said that before, which is called Book of Schemes, and it's about political adventures, and it's for Mithras.
Fantastic. So thank you for coming along today. I'm in a bit of a quandary. I'm a bit of stuck at the moment because I'm creating a new campaign using the After the Vampire Wars, and I want it to be very much an investigative campaign. And we played Book of Schemes and I enjoyed that so much that I thought if you could share your words of wisdom about creating political adventures or investigative adventures, that would be absolutely fantastic. So where do you start? What's the starting point for these sorts of campaigns or adventures?
Well, like with any other adventure, also a linear one, you start with the rough idea, right? So, does it have, do you want to run a murder investigation? Or do you want to run a political investigation? Or finding the victim of a kidnapping? So, you start with the overall idea and then start to break that down. And often, don't be afraid to start with the climax. Like, how do you want the climax to be? Is this because that's often where you get your best and most visual ideas. Like, I've had an entire adventure building up from saying that I wanted an intense fight on a rooftop, for instance, right? And then say, okay, I want to do that. And then I figure out how to do the fight on the rooftop. And then I say, okay, now this works mechanics wise. This will be intense. This will be good. Now I need something leading up to that. And then I start planning the adventure, right? And the climax can be much less in special investigations. The climax can be, it doesn't have to be a fight. In a lot of the like classic crime investigation books, the climax is, you know, takes place with everyone sitting around a fire and the investigator telling everyone how things went on. Of course, that isn't very suited to a game, but you might have a climax, which is just them bursting in and saying, arrest that person. And then to keep that still climactic, you can have like a revelation about the campaign or about actually, yes, I did murder him, but I was forced to do so by someone else, and then someone shoots him or a knife or something like that, right? So you can have climactic scenes which are not combats, but are climactic from the content or the just from the dialogue, really. If it's a well-written NPC and they've like met them before and build up over several adventures, you can have just a climactic dialogue can be just as good a climax as a dungeon or a chase or a combat or whatever other sort of climax. So I would start there, the rough idea and how you want it to climax, and then sort of use that as a frame to start asking yourself more questions about what's going on.
Yeah, so it's almost like I think I want it almost like a grand reveal, you know, all of a sudden all the jigsaw pieces come together, and it's that sort of like almost like that eureka moment when everybody goes, "Ah, this is it," you know. So, and the campaign's going to be very like Call of Cthulhu-esque sort of like thing. There might be a big battle there, but that I like that idea of starting at the climax and then working back. So I've got this sort of like ending. So what's next now? How do I sort of like track backwards?
Yeah, so the next thing you need to figure out, and I'm going to use some terminology here, which is my own terminology, but if you read there, like I think there's a Chaosium book about running investigations. They have their own terminology which people can look up on. That's for Call of Cthulhu, obviously, but I'm going to use my own. So first you need to decide, is this an open or closed investigation? And an open investigation could be things like where the players don't necessarily know that they're investigating anything, or they might. So, and a closed investigation is much more local to one specific problem. So to put some more words on that, if you think about Sherlock Holmes, each individual case he does would be a closed investigation. There's one murderer or one kidnapper or one solution to this puzzle. But the overall arch of going after Moriarty, and actually only like several adventures into that campaign does the main character realize that there's an overarching story to everything, and things are tied together. And you could have the same thing where they're solving a murder, or they're finding a missing person, or tracking down some stolen important industrial papers, And then after some time, things start clicking for them, right? So each of those adventures would be a closed investigation, but there's an overall arc, which is an open investigation.
So that sounds really, so it could be that we have a series of closed investigations, like little, almost like adventures in themselves. Mm. But then the players start to realize that it's actually part of a bigger scene.
So that's a good way of doing it. But of course you can have both things. You can also have several linear adventures, which are not investigations at all, which are part of one open investigation arc. Or you can have just saying, okay, this adventure we're doing, we're taking a break from dungeon crawling. This is a closed investigation. You're finding one missing person, and then when that's over, it's back to killing goblins, right? So it doesn't have to follow that layered structure, but it if you pull it off well, it's very satisfying. I've had, like, in my own Book of Schemes games, for instance, we played for 2 years, and at the end you happen like something's going on here. So 2 years into the campaign, they're starting to say, okay, someone behind the scenes is pulling the threads here and trying to create political unrest and various other things. And when it suddenly dawned on them how many of their adventures, like 18, 24 months back, had tie-ins to this overarching scheme, it was just like, okay, we're actually in a world where things are planned. It's not just the GM's spurs of the moment. This is actually a world where there are political players following plans. It's things clicked for them, and it was very satisfying as a game master.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. That sudden realization that they've been part of this for a significant amount of time. So how do you sort of like put the main characters into it? Is that something that you create right at the beginning or as you go along?
Depends. I actually want to circle back to my terminology because I have we need to one more thing before we can really start characters. And the next thing is that you want to think about whether this is a static investigation or a dynamic investigation. So a static investigation is that classical, like a murder on the Orient Express, right? So a murder has happened. There are these people involved. They can't get away. They're on a faraway state or on a train that's shut down in the snow or something like that. So that's a static investigation. There are clues to find. The clues will point you to the murderer. And then there are dynamic investigations, which are much more, you're in a city. The culprit might even have already gotten away. If you're finding a missing person, that person might be moved around. They might start with being kidnapped, and if you find them within a few hours, they're in a car somewhere. But if it takes more than a few hours, then they're stuck in a warehouse. And then if the players mess up halfway through the adventure and get spotted, the culprits move the victim to an office building, a cellar. Right. So that's much more dynamic. So you want to establish that as well. Before you delve into characters, because in the first one the characters will have to be much deeper for things to make sense. Where in the second one, the dynamic one, you can much more have a broader improvisation style where you need them to find this thing, but whether they learn that from a taxi driver or dog worker, it doesn't really matter. Whereas in the first one, if you don't play your characters right, nothing works, right? Because they're the ones carrying everything. They need backgrounds, they need lines written, various other things, right?
And that static one, those characters have to be very consistent as well. So yeah. I'm almost like thinking from, I love that terminology, by the way, it's fantastic. I really sort of like thinking that probably I might go down the route of a closed dynamic to start off with, to get that feel, but also to for the players to realize what sort of game we're playing, what style we're playing, which it's probably more akin to something like when we play Destined rather than when we play classic fantasy, you know. I like that. So yes, yeah, so I've got that now. I've got this closed and this dynamic. So and next, is that what comes next?
No, the next thing is the resolution mechanics, and then we'll talk characters. So the next thing you need to figure out is your resolution mechanics. So you can say they need to figure this out. You're going to provide clues, and they need to figure them out. It rarely works very well. You need to be very, very good at making clues that point towards the conclusion you want them to take. And you need to be very good at conveying those clues to the players, because what often happens is that you have, you know, you've laid out the murder scene, you have the clues, you think they point to one person, then someone misunderstands something, and it gets sort of, that misunderstanding spreads throughout the party, even though you're trying to clarify it, and you don't want to clarify too much because they should be allowed to make mistakes. And then suddenly everyone's concluded that it's the gardener and instead of the butler, right? And that might be okay. I mean, maybe they get an innocent man thrown into jail, and that can lead to more adventures. But that should happen because something interesting in the story. It shouldn't happen because they misunderstand what you're saying. So you can go for pure puzzle solving, but it's hard. So what I usually do is that I try to do that, and I try to say, if they figure this out from the clues, fantastic. But I have a resolution mechanic as a fallback. So a resolution mechanic would, in Mithras terms, usually be a task. It could also just be a single skill roll. And in other systems, there are other like mechanics for doing it. But a resolution mechanic is, for instance, in the adventure we played, where you had to find a warehouse. There was a task behind the scenes where the investigation you guys did gave you bonuses or penalties to skill rolls, and those skill rolls added up to a task, and then so 25% completion for each successful roll, 50 on a crit, fumbles withdraw, right? And then when you hit 100%, you find the warehouse. Because if I had tried to make you puzzle out where the warehouse is by laying out a grid, and they're saying, okay, there are six rows of warehouses and there are five columns, and in each there are these many, and trying to have you figure out which set of warehouses to look at, that could maybe have been interesting, but the chances of misinterpreting something is very, very high. And even though you can catch that as the game master saying, oh, you actually hear I was talking about, that sort of drains tension. Yeah. So I would try to have it. Maybe if everything clicks, your player starts puzzling things out. Sometimes they even have a better explanation of what's going on than you do, and you can reverse it reverse things. Oh, that's actually a good point. And then suddenly take that into your plan and saying, okay, that's, maybe it happened like this instead, and then go with their idea as they're talking. But have some resolution mechanic in the background where you say, okay, if they get stuck or if they're very close to not figuring this out or getting bored, which is perhaps the worst puzzle option, then you can have some very obvious clue fold in. You can have them take a skill check to gain another clue. Burn luck points in case of Mithras to get a clue, or have an underlying resolution mechanic such as a task or something where you roll in the background or they roll, and then when they've made enough skill checks, you give them the answer. It depends a bit. So doing that for a murder investigation is maybe a bit boring, but doing it for finding a missing person or finding missing papers or plans for the death style or something like that can be very satisfying. And for a murder puzzle, it would be better to have when you've made these many skill checks, you find the really big clue, which is so obvious that anyone can't miss it, right?
Got you. It's interesting because as a player, when we were doing the Book of Schemes adventure, I was not aware of that background mechanic at all, you know.
No.
And so that really sort of like, now that I know it was going on, everything makes sense from a GM's point of view. You know, I can see how us doing different tasks led to that resolution mechanic, which is brilliant. Yeah.
And I could take your ideas. Okay, so someone goes investigate something I haven't thought about, and I think that's a good idea. Okay, take a streetwise check for it. And then if they succeed on that, I add that to the task, right? And then you can have various other aspects. So on a fail check, something happens. On a fumble, something additional happens. If you again remember that adventure after you found the warehouse and there was a battle at the warehouse, there was a chase to get out. That was also a task. So what happened was that you guys were taking streetwise checks to escape without getting spotted by the gang members. And every time you failed, there was an event where you almost got caught or almost got into combat or had to succeed on some skill checks to climb over a wall before they came. Right. So there was some negative consequences on failing these skill checks. And of course you want some of those, because if you had just rolled four successes on streetwise as a party and gotten away fine, that's boring, right? But having some interesting things happen along the way can sort of make the chase more intense.
And that really added to the narrative as well, as we, because I think I'm right, we sort of like split the party up and went in two different directions, if I remember correctly. So,
yeah.
And that really sort of like added to the that need to get away quickly, you know. Mm. To escape. So I really like that idea of a resolution mechanic, and I can see me using it a lot in other adventures as well as this new one. So that's brilliant.
And that's generally something that's rarely taken into account in role-playing games, right? It's usually find the dungeon, go into the dungeon, clear all the trash, find the boss, kill the boss.
Yes.
And then the adventure ends.
Yeah.
But what about getting away again or like getting back? And you can make that part interesting as well. And actually in that adventure, the chase at the end was actually the climax of the adventure, not the fight. It was getting through a dark city without getting spotted by these gang members, right? That was actually the climax. It wasn't the big baddie battle.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of the time, you're right, we don't look at the journey home or going back again. It's almost like get there, big fight, and then, you know, almost like teleport people back, you know, to their village or hamlet. I was just thinking that really is interesting when you think about luck rolls and people using up their luck earlier on in the battle, but then suddenly realizing there's another situation to survive, you know, which is brilliant. And I really did love that the escape part of the Book of Schemes, you know, that was brilliant. So anything else before we move on to NPCs?
Yeah, So we can talk about NPCs now. I have some more points. So NPCs can be, especially in static investigation, in static closed investigation, very, very important for conveying, because they would be interviewing. They would be finding clues, like the murder weapon, the fingerprints, and they will be interviewing NPCs and getting their stories. And they can be, the more you rely on NPCs for conveying clues, is the more risky it becomes, right? It can be very, very satisfying, but it's very hard. Because what happens when one NPC says something and another NPC says something else? In a murder book, if you're reading a book, then there's an inconsistency. We need to investigate this and find out who's lying. And maybe one of the one, when we find out who's lying, maybe they're covering for the murder, or maybe the other. The problem is, in reality, in a role-playing game, what happens when those are two different sessions, 3 weeks apart? They talk to NPC A 3 weeks ago, they talk to NPC B now. They're not going to remember the details, right? Even if they happen on the same session, someone might be walking to the bathroom and miss something important, which they influence how they think about the things, right? So it's not impossible. It can really be done, but it's hard. And it's probably not where one should start relying too much. That doesn't mean don't have NPCs. That means don't tie clues directly to NPCs.
Got ya. Yeah.
So instead of doing that, instead of being NPC focused, I would be clue focused. So define what clues are available to the players when you're preparing. So let's take a murder scene. So there's a murder scene, and you say, okay, there are fingerprints, there are fingerprints at the window and at the door. There's a blood stain under the bed. There's a knife hidden in the trash. Things like that, right?
Yeah.
And then you can have some more. Those are very focused clues. And then that you can have more broad things. So you know from your preparation that the murder took place at midnight, and you can have you can say, okay, so murder took place at midnight. And then you can say, you can jot down ideas about how they find out that clue. So you can say, pocket watch is broken at midnight on the victim. You can say neighborhood noise at midnight. Someone across the street saw light flashing at midnight. And jot down ideas like that.
Right.
And then you do that for several clues. I would say at least five or six, but you could go wild and have many. Make sure that you know the clues are pointing to the conclusion you want, unless you want to deliberately have clues pointing to someone innocent. Of course, again, that's you can pull it off, but it becomes hard because of the misunderstandings that happens and time between sessions. And then, but have alternatives on each clue. So some of them might come by talking to an NPC. Some might come by finding things, and it might be the same basic clue, right? The clue is murder took place at midnight.
Yeah.
Whether they find it from speaking to the neighbor or looking at the pocket watch doesn't matter that much. And they might come up with something during investigation where they just, oh, I wanna hack into the city's records for something, and then you can might maybe find out that the murder took place at midnight from mobile phone data, right? When did his phone go blank? And then you say, oh, I didn't think of that. But sure, you can get the clue, murder took place at midnight. From that action, then you give it out, even though you hadn't thought of it. So
No.
by being clue focused, you don't you instead of NPC focused, you have much more leeway, wiggle room. If you make a mistake during impersonating an NPC, you don't have to like beat yourself afterwards. Say, oh, they were talking to the gardener, so he really should have told them this thing. You can just slot it in when they're talking to someone else,
That's
right? The important thing is that they get that clue. If they succeed on the skill checks or the social, like on the dialogue options they have, right? So be clue focused and then build NPCs instead of vice versa, because this is a game, not a book.
I really like that. I really like that clue focus because I'm often worried that I'm going to, with NPCs, I'm always worried that I'm going to give contradicting information or information that, doesn't, is getting the players more confused rather than leading towards clue. So I like that idea of clue focus and that idea that, if a player comes up with something completely new that I hadn't thought of, I can still feed those clues in to what they're going to be doing. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
Right.
and this way of having multiple ways of doing it means that you can slot them in later, and you can tie them in if you know that if a clue is very important for the climax, right, you can make sure that the clue gets introduced, even though they don't look at it. So, for instance, let's say you have a climax that you want a very tense scene where the players see two persons in the darkness boarding a boat, and they know that one is the kidnapper and one is the victim. And you will make sure that they know that, and you have that one chance to shoot one of them before they get on the boat and leave the city, but they don't know which is which, right? So they will have needed to be introduced to clues to figure out whether it's the tall one or the small one, for instance. So it's very, very important for the climax that the players are given clues early whether the victim is tall or short. So let's say it's a short person threatening a tall person onto the boat, right? You can then jot down victim, abducted person is tall, like 2 meters or something, and then say, okay, when they're investigating his apartment, there are long raincoats, right? Very long raincoats. There are basketball trophies on the stand. There are you can talk to neighbors or friends who might, if the conversation is stirred in that direction, will tell them that the person is very tall. When they're visiting his mother, they might see a photograph of him beside his mother where he's towering over her, right? So you can really easily just short one-liners, jot down how can they figure out the person is tall. So that even if they just blunder in and they're just investigating his apartment and they just go straight and look at his computer and hack into it and don't find anything, and then they leave again, right? If you had only tied anything up on them noticing the raincoats, it would be very unsatisfying for you to say just, oh, as you're walking out the door, you notice a lot of very long raincoats, right? So instead, you can have all these various options, and you can even, like, if they're very, very pressured and just blunder around, you can later on, before the climactic scene, you can have one of them, if they're really like, okay, we don't know what we're doing, you can have one, okay, burn a lock point. And then you remember when you were at his mother's place, you saw this photograph of where he was very tall or something. And then have some other details, so it's not obvious that that's the clue they should get, but something they can tie back to, right? And then you've sort of built the clue thread up to the climax so they have the necessary knowledge.
Hence why it's really important to almost like backpedal from that climatic situation, the end of the adventure, so you can weave the threads through right the way to the beginning. And then they sort of like collect those as they go along. Yeah, got that. Anything else? I'm writing all this down, by the way.
Sure. You need to, of course, we've talked about this a bit, but you need to define the goal. Like, is it a murder investigation, or is it finding a missing person, or whatever is it, a stolen item, right? And then make sure you're also describing fairly precisely what happened during the crime. Right. You need to know, how did the perp enter the building? How did they open the door? How was there a struggle? All of these things, and have it outlined as a timeline of events. So that even though there are things you haven't thought about, when the players have alternative ways of figuring out clues, you can say, okay, this is what happened. Right. Again, maybe the lock is electric and tied into his overall smart house system, and that's the way they figure out when the door was opened, by hacking into that system. And you hadn't thought of that, it's just a lock, right? But then when they're looking around, this is a rich person, so you're saying, they're opening the fridge. Oh, the fridge is one of the very nice modern ones that connects to Wi-Fi. And oh, does he have all the smart features? Yeah, sure. He has smart lights and all things. And then, oh, so the door is a smart door as well. Yeah, sure. Okay, I find his computer and I hack into it. Oh, but you know when it was opened and broken, so it's not a problem for you, even though you haven't thought about it. So make sure you have a timeline and a description of events, and make sure you also have, if it's a dynamic situation and not a static one, and even some static ones are not 100% static, but close to it. Make sure there's also a timeline of what happens during the scenario. Like, if it takes more than 6 hours, he's going to reach the warehouse instead of being in the car, right? Or if it takes 48 hours, they're going to shoot him and you fail. Something like that. Have a timeline of that, so that you can track along if there are things that change. And this will also give you an option of saying, okay, so if they've been at this for in-game 18 hours, it's because they're messing up. They're not in the mindset. You've planned bad clues. Okay, so 18 hours, if you're still in that point, someone is gonna get wise to you investigating this and is gonna try to track you down and engage you in a fight, right? So that's another way, that's the sort of the cutoff, and saying, if this is taking too long, I can like change this a bit more and make it a bit more actiony.
Yeah.
And then also have some clues in that engagement after they look through the bodies of the ones that attack them or take them prisoner or whatever, to like help you get things moving again.
So it's almost like a timeline that's going on in the background. The rest of the world or the plot is actually still developing or still going ahead, and the which might be a separate timeline for than the players, you know. And I like that idea that, you know, if they're struggling or they're not in that mindset, you can sort of like pop a bit of action in that helps them sort of like recover and get back on. When you're planning these, do you is at the timeline, do you is that sort of like where you start from to sort of like see where the climax is going to be, etc.? Or is it more like a just a like a mind map that you sort of like draw all the ideas down from?
Well, as mentioned, I would start working backwards from the climax, and then I would say, okay, I want this climatic scene on top of a roof with rapiers, because that's what I want. And it needs to be raining, and it needs to be very intense, right? Because it should be like, you killed my father or something very intense, right? How would that make sense? How do they know they killed his father? Why do they hate him so much? Why are they on a roof? And then start adding components to the timeline, which explains that. And then those components need further explaining. And suddenly a timeline starts to get built backwards from that. And then you come back to the initial murder scene or whatever it is. And then you start deep diving on that specific timeline for that, right? The one I mentioned before. So it's usually two. There's the timeline for the scene that you're investigating, and then there's the timeline for what's happening in the background
Yes.
leading up to the climax. But I would always start, I usually work backwards.
Yeah. I
And then
think
you can have detours on the as well, right? So.
as a GM, I'm always interested what these adventures look like when people are actually recording it. You know, is it that people just sort of like write everything down, or is it more sort of like a visual linking together on a diagram? And that's one of the
So the timeline would be written down, usually, and so would the clues. So if I was running one of these, not for publication, because in publication you need to write everything down, right? But if I was just doing this for myself, I would probably have 4 or 5 pieces of paper. And on those, one would be the timeline of the murder, if it was a murder or whatever event it was. One would be the overarching timeline. One would be an overview of the characters involved, and one would be an overview of the clues involved. And then the last one would be general notes from. I keep a lot of things in my head when I'm running, so some people will need to spell it out more detailed, and others might not. I usually make a fairly solid frame, and then I improvise within that frame. Again, if I write down saying a clue, the victim is very tall, and I've had four or five possible options for how they can figure that out. I'm pretty certain that even if they don't do anything of that, I will be able to improvise my way into them finding that clue. And then when they find a clue, I can like mark it off on my paper saying, now they have that clue. Now they have that clue, right? And they don't need all clues. Usually it's more is often better, because players can be incredibly daft if they're not trained to run investigation, to be in investigative adventures. Like taking normal dungeon crawling players and assuming they can just figure out the way the clues are structured in your head is not very realistic. So have as very many very simply understood clues.
Yes, and I think that's something that I need to. I think sometimes when I'm creating an adventure, it seems logical to me, but it might not seem logical to anybody else with those clues. So keeping everything simple and straightforward, I think, is a real good piece of advice to it. Do you encourage players to use their own intellect to solve clues or find clues, or do you use a lot of skill rolls in those situations?
Well, the purist in me would say that the skill rolls are for gathering, is for interacting with the world, right? So you call for skill rolls when there's an option for failure in something they're doing. Like if there's a blood stain under the bed and they look under and they say, I look under the bed, then they get, okay, there's a blood stain, right? If they just say, I searched the room, roll a perception check. If on a success, under the bed, you find a blood stain, right? But then when it comes to tying clues together, we come back to the puzzle versus resolution mechanic, right? If I give them several clues and I can listen to the conversation and I can, okay, they seem to be in a mood to figure it out. This is going well. Then I won't call for anything more. If they get stuck, if things start getting boring, if tension is being lost, I would have some resolution mechanic to help them get along. And I'll say, okay, guys, I can hear that you are getting frustrated because you can't figure out what's happening on. Would one of you like to burn a luck point? And I'll give you a hint. Just to move them along. The most important thing here is tension and fun. It's a game after all, right? So you know, I was once in my early days as a player. I was once in a game where the game master was just, we had to find some missing documents, and then we started throwing ideas at him on how we could use our skills to figure out, this was Vampire the Masquerade, how we could use our skills to figure out where the documents were. And everything we did was just like, oh, you don't find anything. Nope, you don't find anything there. And then after we tried that for 30 minutes, we just looked at each other like, okay, should we go grab some pizza? It's just, and we didn't get back to the game because he didn't play ball with us, right? Because he had an idea of where they were and he wouldn't divulge from that plan. Don't be afraid if your sense of the tension around the table starts wavering and the people got bored, the number of Monty Python jokes per minute starts skyrocketing. Then say, oh, guys, you're losing focus. I would like to help you, but I need some ideas from you about how we want to tackle this, or I need someone to burn a luck point or spend a lot of money bribing someone, something like that. They need to then either show some creativity or just pay for resources to get something, either their money, their luck points, whatever your system has as a metagame currency, if you're not playing Mithras. And then... yeah, just move it along. Have someone again burst into the door and yell something weird, or have someone make a drive-by yelling something obscene at them, which is a chance of picking up a clue, right? Throwing a stone with a message wrapped around it at them, things like that. Just move it along. Tension is important.
Very much so, and I think that's when I. you know, when I'm teaching, I'm often looking at the class to see how they're responding. And I think I use that skill in role-playing games as well. I'm sort of like thinking, how are they responding? Are they engaged? Are we drifting away? How can I bring them back into it? And I think Call of Cthulhu, the rule set actually has an idea role that they can, if they're stuck, they can roll their skill for, and that gives them an idea where to go next, etc. I really like what you're saying, because I was really worried that they weren't going to get to the end, if that makes sense. They weren't picking up the clues, but I can see now that the clues can be given in a variety of ways, and what I'm looking for is almost like a way to for them to get that clue rather than saying, you need to do this.
And especially if we're talking multi-session open investigations, again, like realizing that someone is pulling the threads behind the scene on the political system, right? There you should actually think about clues as a sort of reward on par with money or magic items, and saying, So behind the scenes, someone is manipulating the city council to get this law enacted, right? Okay, you can figure out a set of clues for that. Let's say you find 8-10 clues pointing to that fact. You should have an idea. Okay, so after session one, they should be giving, at the end of the session, they should know this clue. And by itself, that won't really matter to them, right? And then after third session, they should know this as well. And then after fourth session, they get this clue. After sixth, they get this clue. And then it will dawn on them gradually throughout the campaign, especially if you at some point reference back. Let's say in seventh session, someone mentions what happened. Like an NPC mentions something that happened back in the early sessions, and they're reminded of the first clue, and then suddenly, oh wait, we have like a string of things here. So treat it just like you would say when you're planning a dungeon crawling session. You would say, at the end of this session, the paladin has a new +2 sword. At the end of this session, the rogue has a ring of invisibility, so on. Just plan out, at the end of the session, they should have this fact established somehow. And then again, having multiple ways of finding that clue, because that would help tie it together over multiple sessions.
Yeah, I really like that idea that it's almost like a reward for completing that part of the adventure. You get an additional clue, which will be really motivating for the players as well. I think that, you know, they're getting closer and closer. Have you ever had an investigative or political adventure go dreadfully wrong, and they head off in the wrong direction, or accidentally shoot somebody that is a main character, or anything like that?
I've had a political adventure go be really boring.
Right.
Where they were the party, it was sort of like a Celtic world, and they were at a moot essentially, with representatives from all the various factions discussing something important, and I just failed to hook them into it, even though they've been playing in this world for a while and they sort of knew what had to happen. Most of the session just ended with me being narrating what the various parties were saying at the moot. And that wasn't very rewarding for anyone. I was talking all the time. They weren't really doing anything. So that session was a lot of waste, I would say. And that's probably the worst part I had, where I failed to hook them into the options there were for going behind the scenes and checking out the cams of the various parties and figuring out their political stances. And I think, again, I was too NPC focused and not enough knowledge or clue focused, because I ended up just saying, okay, so this guy stands up and he blah, 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 blah. And then Okay, do you want to do anything? No, not really. Okay. Then this guy stands up and he says blah blah blah. And so I completely mismanaged that session and I learned a lot from it. But that's probably the worst example I've encountered.
So that
I
working
think.
clues rather than the NPCs is a really good point, to.
Again, what I should have done is I should have jotted down various clues about the political situations, and then I should have much more free form allowed them to explore the mood camp and individually, and having options for picking up these various pieces of information so I could hook them into the story, and then cutting down on the number of NPCs narrations I have to do, right? But I learned a lot from that.
It's been absolutely fantastic. I'm just looking the time, and I've learned so much, and I feel really confident to go and give it a go now. Just before we go, do you want to say something about your publications that are already out there and your upcoming one that will be out there soon, I hope?
Yeah, sure. So the ones I already have out there are the combat modules for Mithras. They are modules that teach people various aspects about the combat system. I have one more working on, but I've been working on it for a few years and it's not ready for publication yet. But they take one aspect of combat at tutorial level in a computer game. It's essentially one combat which forces you to learn one lesson. If you learn it, you can beat the combat. If you fail to learn it, or if you fail to follow up on the tips and don't do things correctly, then you likely die horribly. They come complete with NPCs and pre-written characters and tokens for role playing on online, and can be bought at the Design Mechanism store. And then, very very soon, hopefully, if the design document doesn't mess up again. We've had some really troubles with corrupted files for some reason. Book of Schemes should hit shelves within, hopefully within a month, maybe two. I don't know right now. We're redoing the design, internal art design. And that is a complete book, not just a module, outlining a 15th century fantasy city, Germanic fantasy city, with the various details about the nobility and the middle class and the lower classes, how the city works, and then a lot of points about how to run political games. Essentially, what we talked about here, but tied into political games and with even more points and archetypes to follow and various things. So it's a very urban scheming based sandbox book, and it's for Mithras, but most of the book is just NPCs, motivations, plot hooks, and can easily be converted into whatever sort of game you want.
And the introductory adventure that we played was absolutely fantastic. And we're
You
so,
found on your channel.
yeah, we are, I know all the players are looking for the Book of Schemes coming out so they can buy it. And I do think the combat modules are absolutely brilliant as well, especially if somebody's coming new to Mithras and they're not too sure how combat works. It's a really good way to get the GM and the players into the mindset for it, which
Yeah, they can be used as introductory. I would dial down the difficulty if people were first time Mithras players. They're sort of best if you've played Mithras for a few sessions. You know the basics, but you need to like understand the combat system. If it's your first time, you can sort of use them as introductions, but dial down the deadliness. Otherwise, people might get the wrong idea because Mithras isn't as deadly as many people think because of luck points. But because the combat modules are so focused, they can be quite deadly. Because in for instance, breaking the habit, the first one has you in an alley which is blocked. You need to break through, right? In most Mithras campaigns, you would have a various other options. You could escape over the rooftops, or you could try to blend into the crowd to get away. You could throw away your weapons and your clothing, or various other things that could keep you alive. In this situation, there's only one way, and that's breaking through the line of soldiers, which means if you don't do that perfectly, at least one character is going to die very quickly. So they can be quite deadly, but of course, the team can always dial down the difficulty or give out more luck points or whatever. So.
Yeah, it's been a joy talking to you, Dan, and a fantastic GM as well. I really love Book of Schemes when you GM'd it for us. So thank you for
Thank
giving
you.
me time and coming along and talking to the podcast this month.
You're welcome.
I learned so much from Dan, and I've already started to create the campaign. Before we embark on that campaign, however, we will be playing Mithras in our live streams for a while. We are lucky to have two new players joining us, and one has even agreed to play an animist. Hurrah! We only now need a mystic, and we have a full set of magic. Now remember, if you would like to contribute to the podcast, then why not just drop me an email or message and let me know what you would like to cover. We're always looking for reviews or chats with people. So if you are interested, you can email me at inwills@gmail.com or send me a message on the Discord and the various forums I frequent. And that's it, another episode of Mithras Matters completed. Don't forget you can check out all my content by following my YouTube channel and the campaign areas on World Anvil. I really appreciate your support. And do check out the Discord and Tapper Talk forums where there are great people sharing their ideas in the discussions. So, until next time, have a great month of gaming, and I will chat to you all again in March. Until then, I hope all your opposed roles succeed and provide you with a well-deserved special. Thanks for listening, everyone. See ya. Bye. The content of this podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license, so please give appropriate credit if you are sharing or copying any part of this podcast. Thank you.